Hey, this is Colt Cabana, and you're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Hi, wrestling fans. I'm Bob Caldwell. Welcome to another exciting, action-packed hour of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling.
Hi, wrestling fans. Welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Network. I'm Bob Caldwell, along with David Crockett. And this week, we got action to send your way.
Hello, wrestling fans. I'm Bob Caldwell. Welcome to Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
It's Bob Caldwell and Johnny Weaver. Welcome to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. Johnny, this week, another outstanding hour of wrestling for all our wrestling fans beginning right now.
And Bob Caldwell, Lance Russell, welcome again to another great hour of NWA Pro Wrestling, our big main event during this hour.
You know, I was working with Bob Caldwell, which is one of the great joys of my life. I love Bob, still love him. What an honorable, good human being he is. He was just amazing to work with, positive, and I just love Bob, and I just love traveling with him. You know, when you travel with Bob, it's like traveling with your uncle.
Yeah, Bob's tremendous and a great man, a legitimately good person.
He was a wonderful man, and he's the nicest man in the world.
He was really into what he was doing, and he was just a great personality and fun to be around.
The eighth wonder of the world, Andre the Giant. And here to sign the contract with Andre now.
I was working at WRAL TV in Raleigh, and they decided that they wanted someone to do a wrestling show. And I'd worked a couple of shows with my fellow named Bibber McCoy out of Boston. So the Crocketts asked me if I would do that. And I said, we'll give it a try, and I did. I think the first matches I ever called were Weaver and Johnny Weaver and George Becker were tag team partners. I loved Gordon, worked with Gordon several times. Heck of a guy to work with. Lance and his wife became real close friends of ours, and we became close friends and kept in touch. He's a heck of a nice guy, I'll tell you that. I love Dutch. Dirty Dutch Mantell. Dutch was fun to work. You never knew what was going to come out of the mouth of Dutch. I mean, but he was fun to work with, and he enjoyed it. He had a big time doing it, and I enjoyed Dutch. He was great to work with.
Hi there, wrestling fans. Welcome to NWA Pro Wrestling. Bob Caldwell here with my guests this week, Terry Funk.
You know something, Bobby Caldwell? I was doing it before it was fashionable.
Bob Caldwell, let me tell you, Bob Caldwell.
Boy, I tell you, Bob, I'm just as excited as a kid at Christmas time.
Hey, never in your life, right, brother? Huh? How about you, Bob? What's your wife doing tonight, huh? Check it out, Bob. I won't tell your wife, huh?
I'll check it out.
I'll tell you a little story about Flair. Last time I saw him, as a matter of fact, I had my wife with him, and Rick came up and said, Bob, I said, you're the only guy who used to run around with me that's still married. And that was Ric Flair.
And finally, I want to thank all you fans for allowing me to come into your home over these many, many years. It's been an outstanding time, and I appreciate all of you. And I want you to know I love you all.
Fans, that'll do it for this week. We'll see you next week, and until then, so long for now.
The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
Your shows, your entertainment, and your network. This is Rant EN Radio.
Remember, what this network wants, this network gets. I promise you that.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening.
Broadcasting live from Shaolin, Staten Island.
Freak Show Central.
Where's that?
New York City.
the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. It's the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast on Rant EM Radio. Proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Episode 516 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, for the last 13 years, your ever so gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Rea. And it is November 21st, 2025. And boy, do I have an awesome episode for you guys lined up today. But before I get into the episode itself, I just wanted to jump on and cover some things. Because a lot's been going on here on the island of Staten and beyond. It's been a crazy week since we last spoke, and I'm putting out a little more content, getting a little more inspired. And after I recorded the last episode, I got a text from my new friend, who I've been talking about getting on a podcast since August. I told you guys he was coming on, but now I got a chance to do it, and he finally reached out to me. And we had about an hour and a half chat, and it was awesome. It's been a fun couple of weeks in terms of that, the anticipation of getting that going. As we approach the holiday season, I want to just remind everybody that it's not always jolly for a lot of folks. So wherever you can reach out to friends and family who aren't doing too well, please do that and make sure they're okay. Check in on your friends and your family. Check in on your coworkers, your colleagues. And make sure they're all having a good time. Make sure they're doing okay if they're not. So, all right. Let me tell you what I've been doing. So, went to the big event this past weekend. And I got to see the great Muta. It was awesome. I don't go to a lot of these things, right? And when I do, I usually podcast from them. I don't have, like, the mental capacity to wait on line after line after line after line for autographs. It's not a thing, unless they're, like, somebody really important to me, like, hence the great Muta. I will tell you, man, Sting was there. Let's see, who else was there? The Rougeau brothers were there. Leilani Kai, Judy Martin, the Bomb Angels, of course, who I got to have dinner with. That was amazing, too. And we'll talk about that in a second. There was so many people there. That Chris Van Vliet guy, the guy that does all the interviews, he was there. Enzo Amore. There was a ton. Taz was there. Shotzi Blackheart. There was so many celebrities there. And wrestlers, it was a fun time. Suffolk County, it was the campus of the local college over there, and it was a big place. It was 9,000 degrees though. It was ridiculously warm because it's been getting cold here in the northeast, so it was ridiculously warm in there. But nonetheless, I got my ticket. I brought my gimmicks. I wore my Muta shirt, my Muta scarf from the retirement tour. I had two figures for him to sign, and I sold 8x10s for $5. So you could sign three items in a photo op, which I was so happy to do. It took me no more than 3 minutes to get on the line and meet him, which is pretty cool. And Muta's English is not very good. So I, you know, said hello, and I thanked him in Japanese for everything he's done. He looks pretty beat up, though. He was in a wheelchair, so he Muta put himself through a career of, like, you know. Muta basically was two characters, when you think about it. He was himself, Keiji Muto, and then when he put the makeup on and the gimmick, he was the great Muta. So he basically wrestled two styles for like 40 years. And I don't know if a lot of folks can do that. A lot of performers that we see in this, you know, in the last several years, like, that's kind of hard. If you have a move set, it's not like you're a heel or a face where you know, when you're a heel, you kind of bend the rules. And I'm not saying Muta didn't do that, but Muta really didn't, his persona changed and some of the moveset changed too. And not so much being a heel or a face, but he did different moves as Kijimuto, and then he did different moves as the Great Muta. Some of them were the same, but not a lot. And that's what probably attracted me more, that and of course when he did his tour in the States with Crockett in the late 80s, but I digress. So I'm online and I meet the guy, and as I'm thanking him, he's signing. He was, "What color?" And I see a silver marker. I'm like, "All right, silver's fine." I said, "Silver, please." Kudasai, I said, which is please in Japanese. So kudasai, silver. And he smiled a little bit, like, because I knew some Japanese. And then as he goes and picks up the, one of the figures I have is a, they call them variants, I guess, where they're like, they're hard to come by. So this one was sealed in the package, and it's the one that came out this past year, but it wasn't wearing, a black robe with the red trim. It was a red robe with the black trim. The one that's on display on my mantle here is a black robe with red trim. So it's the opposite of that. And all the, you know, the, and so, the guy who's in charge, like the security guy who takes all the information before you go to the actual table, he goes, "Why don't you do it in green?" Because Muta has the green mist. Muta looks at me and smiles and goes, "Green." And I go, "Ah, green. Yes, green. Kudasai. Kudasai." And he did it green. And I was like, "Yeah, this is cool, man." I took a picture. I shook his hand again. I thanked him again. And then I spent the rest of the day with my boys. My legacy, the JBA legacy, was in effect. Our boy Tom D'Amico, Mickey Mario were there, and Tom's guy, I forgot Tom's friend's name again, but he had a fresh Bam Bam Bigelow shirt, and of course Robin Lane was with us as well. And our girl Kino was with us, because she's with the Bomb Angels, she's their translator. And they had a great turnout. They were part of one of my childhood friends, Martin. He has T-Mart Promotions, and he had them in the Rougeaux, and apparently the girls did really well in terms of the, you know, because Norio's never here in the States, it's always, you know, and she came in for this, and to promote their 40th anniversary show, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, and all the boys are flying over there to hang out and be a part of that, and to actually film. Tom's going to film some of it too, why is words escaping me lately? Because I'm getting old, right? The documentary. Yes, that's right. Documentary. So, we hung out. I mean, again, I bumped into our buddy Chris, who I grew up with, Martin's sister Ro, who I went to school with, sweetheart of a lady, bumped into a couple other friends that were there, and, a couple of the throwbackers said that they saw pictures of me, but didn't see me there, and I got a couple of messages. So shout out to Drew and a couple of the guys that messaged me, like, "Hey, Phil, I didn't know you were there." And I'm like, "Well, I really didn't announce except on the podcast I was going to be there." So, but they, soon they saw me, like, "Hey, I was there too." And I was like, "Hey," you know, and people sharing pictures. And so it was cool, man. It was a good day. I saw my family while I was out there. Had some dinner. Saw my nieces, my nephews, my mom, my sister. Really cool, really excited, but after the event, we had a late brunch, early dinner with the Bomb Angels before they headed back to Japan the next day, and it was nice to hang out with them in the swanky Italian restaurant not too far from where the venue was, and we were kind of underdressed, man. You know, I when the boys picked out the restaurant, I was like, you know, this is there's like a dress code here, right? They're like, no, we'll be all right. We get there, and there's a big sign on the door, like, no flip-flops, no hat, no this, no hoodies, no this, no that. And we're all wearing, like, wrestling shirts and jeans and stuff like that. So it was pretty cool that we got in and we hung out. And I was so excited just to hang out with the girls, you know. And it was nice, like I said, to see Norio again, because, like, I was at her place twice when we were in Japan. And she hasn't been in the States in a while, so it was fun, man, to hang out with them. And they were leaving for Japan the next day, so we got to hang out and have a nice dinner and talk a little bit about everything, really, you know. But it just made me appreciate being a wrestling fan, you know. Being a wrestling fan and being friends with wrestlers, it's kind of a thing where, like, I was never into this for that. I never went out of my way, and, like, I was never, like I said, I was never an autograph chaser. I never did any of that stuff. But to have friends, they're like my friends, like, it's pretty cool. Like, and I was so excited to see them almost as much as I was to see Muta. And they got to hang out with Muta, too. Sting and Muta, like, a bunch. It was really good, man. I don't know how it is for other folks, but, and I guess I should ask Martin this next time I see him, but he was so busy at Ball and Baltimore, because he's been doing this so long. Like, I'm sure, like, he has friends as wrestlers, the wrestlers as friends, because he promotes all these people, you know, and it's the same, sometimes it's the same folks, and he goes to, he has that convention every year down south, and I'm sure that the relationships are different because, you know, everybody's different, obviously. But, like, I'm friends with Joel Gertner, right? But every time I speak to Joel, it's never about wrestling. Never about wrestling. It's about him fundraising for St. Jude, or him messaging me for my birthday, or him messaging me during 9/11 every year, or me messaging him for his birthday. I saw him in Philly. He was at an event I was at a couple years ago, and I friggin' talked to his wife more than I spoke to him. You know, so that was pretty cool, you know. But I was happy. It was a great weekend. And I might go back to some of the, they have another one coming up next year. I might go to that one. I don't know. See how the boys, if the boys go and I'm around and I can afford it, I'll go. These things are very, very, very expensive. So I have to pick and choose because, you know, it could run, depending on how much you get, it could run, like, my friend paid $100 just to meet Killer Cross and his wife. Like, nothing signed, just a picture. I was like, all right, I don't know if they signed anything, but that's $100. AJ Lee was the star of the show. She had a line outside to the door the entire day. The entire day. She was the star of the show. My friend Chris's daughter, Erin, shout out to, I can't believe Erin is graduating college. It's disgusting how old we're getting. But I spoke to her, and she was on the line. She was there. She showed me a picture of her wearing AJ's gear when she was little, like 10 years ago, you know? So come full circle, you know, she waited on that line the entire time she was there just to see her. It was that kind of line. And I did read some of the dirt sheets were posting that there was a guy who took a picture with her, and then he took the pictures or images of himself and he redid them with like Photoshop of them kissing, and like it was weird because obviously AJ didn't pose the kiss, AJ didn't kiss him, so she saw this and like was complained of harassment and like a big deal, and this kid got tortured on social media. So kind of creepy though, like why would you do that? Why would you take the pictures and like jack them up like that and then post them and then ignore her when she asks you to take them down? You know, it's kind of gross, man. But this is why I don't like, so this is the part of the wrestling community I don't like, you know. I heard Goldberg was there too, where Sting and Muta were, and apparently another thing happened where Goldberg was supposed to sign some stuff for another company that was there, and allegedly he blew them off. I don't know the whole, but every dirt sheet and every major website that I follow, had the same article posted, just copied and pasted it, so. It's that stuff I don't like. I don't like the bad part of the wrestling, you know? So, it's that. I don't know, and that's part of the reason why I don't like going to these things either, because it's just, some of these kids are creepy, you know? It's like they stalk these wrestlers at like hotels and airports and conventions and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's been a deal, you know. So, but either way, I had a blast, and I was glad to see the girls. I was happy to see Muda, it's a nice way to round off the year. It's been a long year, you know. So can't believe this time last year I was getting ready to go to Japan, right? I was getting like my paperwork in order. I had gotten my luggage for Christmas. I was getting like, I had to go get some things, and it was so weird. It's time, this year went so fast, you know. And again, I want to thank the boys for hanging out with me, and it was so nice. I miss my boys, really. I wish I lived closer. I wish we all lived, wish we didn't have all these, this distance between us, you know. I know Mickey's got the kid now, and, you know, and the boy, Rob and Lynn do their thing. Tom's in Jersey, you know, so it's kind of like, when we get together, it's kind of special, even if it's for a few minutes. So I'll take whatever I can take, and, really blessed. Honestly, really blessed. Saw the John Cena thing at the Garden on Monday, his final appearance at MSG. I got invited. I wasn't paying $800 to sit ringside, though. Not ringside, but like in the ringside area. The ticket prices were insane. It was a sold out event. The Garden, New York showed up for John Cena. He didn't disappoint. Dominic's gonna get the rematch with him for the IC title at Survivor Series next weekend, which is in Dom's hometown, San Diego. They're doing it at, the Padres Stadium. It's not called Jack Murphy no more. What the hell is it called? Oh boy, I should know this. I play Stratomatic and I watch baseball all the time, but it's escaping me. But they're playing in San Diego. I think it's Petco Park, maybe. I want to say it's Petco Park. I don't remember. It's not Jack Murphy anymore, I can tell you that. But they're having Survivor Series there. Survivor Series teams are rounded out. It's going to be fun. I love the Survivor Series. People are complaining that somebody complained on Busted Open that they shouldn't have it every year. And I'm like, you're right. You're crazy. That's the perfect time to have Survivor Series. It's the end of the year. You have all these feuds. You have 5-on-5 teams of men and women, and you have all these feuds, and you could tell really good stories even leading into the Rumble and Mania season, you know. But John Cena, I like to see Cena drop the belt to Dom at Survivor Series in Dom's hometown with some shenanigans. Dom's not going to beat him straight up, and if he does beat him clean, then that means his last match better be amazing. And who is he going to fight in this tournament? I don't know. Is it Gunther? Who knows? I still think in my heart, I could be wrong, that I don't think this is his last match on December 13th. I don't think so. I think he's going to be at Mania. In my heart, I think something's going to happen where he has to be at WrestleMania, and that's going to blow it off. And he probably will headline the Hall of Fame. That's another thing, too. So, we'll see what happens. Blood and Guts, I saw AEW. I wish they would stay in the cage. Even the girls. Stay in the cage. Don't go in and out with the nonsense. When you get in the cage, stay in the cage and finish it. You know? On the men's side, same thing. On the men's side, though, things are brewing with Moxley's crew, the Death Riders. Mox taps out. The face team wins. Now Mox is going to fight the guy on tomorrow at Full Gear here in Jersey, who tapped him out. Now, if Mox taps out again tomorrow night on the pay-per-view, that team's breaking up. Or they're going to kick him out, and he comes back as a face, and Eddie Kingston will probably save him because that's his boy, and Mox will be a heel again. He'll come out to the Wild Thing friggin' song from the Major League movie, and I'll play the clip of the owner saying, "I hate this," in song. So, fun times. I'm excited for the pay-per-view. I won't be watching it live, though. I have to go see the ending of Wicked, the second part of Wicked. We bought tickets for this months ago, and I want to see the ending of it. It was a two-parter from last year. So I can always... I'll miss the first hour or two, and I'll just go back and watch the rest of it. No big deal. But I know... I think Hammond's going to be there tomorrow. I got offered a ticket, ninth row, for a good price. I just made other plans. Like, I can't, you know. So shout out to Hummer for offering me the ticket for that price. But I just can't go, you know. Got to fill my commitment to the fam, you know. So, interesting, a couple of weeks of wrestling coming up. AEW is also running the holiday shows again at the Hammerstein, which I might go this year. I don't know. If money's not a thing with me next month, then I may go to the one show, not the Collision. I might go to the one show, the Saturday show, the Hammerstein. You know, I love that venue, man. I really do. There's so many cool things happen to us as a crew there. When the ECW had the show, the reunion show in 05, I was there. All the Ring of Honor shows. We saw the evolution of Bullet Club when Ring of Honor ran the Final Battle shows and the War of the World shows and stuff like that. So Hammerstein's got a... I don't know. Hammerstein, for me, is almost like the ECW arena in Philly. I'm not comparing the venues in terms of history, but like it's that kind of feel because it's a smaller place. And it's more intimate, like the arena was, like the bingo hall was, even before they renovated it in Philly. So that, for me, was, you know, that's my comparison to that. So I'm trying to think of anything else is going on, wrestling-wise. Nothing, no, really. I know I'm reading at the barbershop this morning, I was reading some clips from MLW. Mystico won the Opera Cup again. The Opera Cup is like the Crockett Cup. It's got some lineage to it. Look it up. But Mystico, you guys know him better as Sin Cara, for you younger fans. But Mystico is a fantastic performer. I love that Lucha is now, like, getting its dent in other promotions, not just one or two. You know? And it's not even because of the E buying AAA either, which by the way hired Chavo Guerrero, I heard, so that's pretty cool. Get these folks involved, you know. But anyway, getting back to my point, I love that the Lucha influence is going to almost every major indie promotion. Every major indie promotion now has visiting luchadors, which I think is fantastic. It deserves its shine, and it deserves its due. I would love to have some sort of like Lucha Underground type of deal come back. You know, that was so cool. I want to rewatch those two seasons again. Fun, man. That was really fun. And you see some future stars in there too. You know, and some old and some retro and some, you know, throwbacks too. You know, no pun intended. What else is going on? Yeah, a lot of Black Friday sales going on with the wrestling stuff, so keep an eye out. Look on the interwebs. Pro Wrestling Tees is having a Black Friday sale. If you guys want to restock on your turnbuckle throwback shirt, you want to replace the old ones, there's only a couple of styles on there. Feel free to grab one of those or any of our other friends. I know the Wizards have a ton of stuff too. Speaking of the Wizards, 14-year anniversary. I am so proud of you guys. I'm proud to be part of your network. I'm proud to be your friend. And you guys continue to kill it. You evolved. Added more folks to your inner circle. It's Matt's birthday today, too. So happy birthday to Shining Wizards, Matt. I am so proud to be an OG now. I'm the original. I'm probably the first show that was signed on to the network. And I've been a fan of their show since the jump. They're only a year in front of me in terms of lineage, but it's a year of me working a crappy schedule at work and taking the boat home every night and listening to once a week the Wizards, and I can't say nothing but great things about those guys. So congratulations on 14 years, and I love you guys to death. And I got to come back on the show eventually when Tony has another open gimmick at his house. I want to come by and say what's up, you know. So, but all this wrestling talk and talk about wrestling, that pun was intended for the Wizards. But all this talk about wrestling has definitely sparked my love for the game again. So, and I got an unexpected, so our guest this week will be ST Patrick, and he made the Square Circle Wrestling game, and I met him back in August, and you'll hear that in the interview. But ST and I've been trying to get ST on the show since August. I met him again in August, and he asked to come on the show, and I'm like, yeah, no problem. So he waited a couple of weeks, and then he texted me again. He's like, I got this going on, I got that going on. So I said, you know what, you let me know when you're ready. And I got a random text this week, like, hey, what day are you free? And I'm like, you know what, I did it, and here we are, I did it today. So his text came into the perfect time. Me coming off this high of going to the Muda thing and hanging out with my boys and watching a lot of wrestling and, like, really, really good stuff. So I hope you enjoy the interview. I won't be around for the holiday. I'll be away for the holiday. So I want you to have a great holiday, and I want you to enjoy your family and friends. If you have to work, please be careful and be safe, especially if you're in my line of work. And take a minute, sincerely take a minute, and think about what you're thankful for. And we do this every year, you know. And I'm thankful to be alive. I'm thankful to be somewhat healthy. I'm happy to be employed. I'm happy to have a roof over my head. I'm happy I have some amazing friends and some family that really are my lifeline. So I'm thankful for pro wrestling. I'm thankful for all my crappy sports teams that are awful right now. I'm happy for all that. And I'm happy just to be doing this for you guys. So have a great Thanksgiving. If I don't record next week, have a great Thanksgiving. And just take a minute to be thankful, you know, and think about what you're thankful for. It's important, especially when you've lived half your life like I have, and every day is a blessing. Every day is a blessing, you know. Speaking of blessings, my church, which I really haven't gone to much in the last couple of years, New Dorp Moravian, we raised enough money to feed 130 families for Thanksgiving. Part of my thing every year was to either help them make the baskets up and or deliver them. Last couple of years I haven't done it, but I have helped out and donated and made sure that I could, whatever I was able to do, I can do. But I found out today that we're going to feed 130 families this week, and I can't tell you how thankful I am for that, because no one should go hungry, especially in this country, especially during the holidays. No one should go hungry. There should be enough food to go around for everybody with the way things are done now. So I am more thankful for that than anything. For the people, I've been to these people's homes, and when you think you've had it bad, you deliver food to somebody who doesn't have anything, and it puts every single thing into perspective. So if you can help out, if you don't have any family that day, or you're not doing anything, go to your local shelter, go to your local food pantry, help out and feed somebody who needs to be fed, you know. If you don't want to open doors up to strangers, which I understand in this day and age, it's crazy, but my mom did it for so long. Would invite friends over and people who didn't have anything. A little different back then, though. from now. So if you can do that for somebody, man, you know, do it. And, you know, be thankful. All right? All right, enjoy the interview with my man, St. Patrick. He is a cool dude. He's my age, around my age, a little older. He's a phenomenal game creator. His games are so good, and they are well liked in the gaming community, and he is well liked in the gaming community. And I had a chance to hang out with him this summer, him and his wife Jen. Good folks. Midwest guys, really cool people. So enjoy, and we go about almost an hour and a half. We talk about some wrestling, get into the game, and I will post the links to the game. You can buy the game in PDF form or book form. I have everything in PDFs. I did print out the core book, and the core book starts off with the Crockett promotion from '86, and every other book is different territories, and he'll get into that in the interview. So enjoy St. Patrick, and enjoy your holiday, and as always, be kind, be good, just be a good person, be a good soul, be a good human, and that's pretty much it. I'll take a quick break for our friends, and listen to my main man, St. Patrick, as he schools us on this amazing game that everybody should buy and enjoy because of wrestling. That's why. Take care, guys.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
The Mark Order Podcast is the only show you need if you're looking for dedicated coverage of everything AEW on the Shining Wizards Network. Join us live on YouTube every Wednesday night at 10:15 p.m. Eastern after Dynamite to chat along with the show. If you can't join us live, listen to us on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on all social channels at Mark Order Pod and use the hashtag #JoinTheMarkOrder. Because if you don't find us,
we will find you.
G'day guys, my name is Thomas, one half of the Brocast Podcast. With our podcast, we go back and watch wrestling events from WWE, WWF, WCW, ECW, AEW, and many other wrestling promotions. You can check us out on Twitter at The Brocast, that's THEBROKAST, and you can also download all episodes on Apple Podcasts, Castbox, Castro, and many other podcast apps.
Got 30 minutes to kill?
Come check out 30 Screams or Less, where we review a horror movie in 30 minutes or less. We cover new movies and old ones too.
We'll give our honest thoughts on the movie, good or shit, as well as a rating of each one that we watch.
New episodes weekly, available on the Shining Wizards Network and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Corey.
Come check us out at 30 Screams or Less.
You like your music heavy? Then check out Radioactive Metal on the Shining Wizards Network. For over 16 years now, Radioactive Metal has been one of the longest running podcasts. Over the years, we've interviewed some legendary metal acts, had some awesome discussions, and cranked a hell of a lot of tunes. So join your cool Uncle Snowy and his co-host Aaron for the audio mosh pit that is Radioactive Metal here on the Shining Wizards Network.
Well, the action is underway!
What's up, everyone? When on the Shining Wizards Network, be sure to check out Wrestling Night in Canada. If we're not recording another kick-ass podcast,
or playing in punk bands,
or recording kick-ass heavy metal albums,
then we're sitting back, we're grabbing a couple brews, and going over everything to do in the world of pro wrestling.
Because we're from Winnipeg, you idiots.
Are you tired of being lied to every day by the mainstream media?
Do you want to know what's really going on in the world?
Do you want to make up your own mind about things and not be told what to think or say?
Then listen to Inconclusive Breakdown, a weekly anti-PC look at the world of entertainment and current events brought to you without censorship or filters.
You can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts, BitChute, and on ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
And also, we're a proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
The Shining Wizards is the greatest wrestling podcast of all time. Don't believe me? Tune in and check us out. We laugh, we cry, we interview some of the greatest people in professional wrestling, and we have some of the greatest segments of all time, including everyone's favorite wrestling game show, Can You Beat That? We're live 6:50 p.m. East on Monday nights on all social media platforms, and we're with you wherever you go on every single streaming and podcasting platform as well. Check us out. Go over to ShiningWizards.com and join us for some wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
Yo, Hulkamaniacs! It's Thanksgiving night, and this is the happiest time of year for all the maniacs, brother. You know, me and all my little Hulksters, we got a lot of things to be thankful for. Number one, we're thankful for being happy and very healthy. We're thankful for having time to share with our loved ones. We're also thankful that Hulkamania is still the strongest force in the universe. And after the turkey's done, after the blessings are all done, I can tell you what the Hulkster's mostly happy about. It's Survivor Series time, and I'm thankful for my team of Hulkamaniacs.
I'm thankful because I'm rich and you're not.
I'm thankful for having Damien and the DDT.
You know what we're thankful for?
We don't have to fight each other.
Oh, yeah. I am thankful that I am the only man worthy of being the Macho King.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thankful for the privilege of living right here in the good old U.S. of A.
Tough guy.
I'm thankful I've got the big earthquake on my side.
What I'm thankful for Thanksgiving, for my polka dots.
I'm thankful for the judges I serve.
I'm thankful for wrestling, cutting, and strutting.
I'm thankful for my good looks.
I'm thankful for having the most ravishing body in the WWF.
I'm thankful because I ate Ricky Rude.
I am thankful for being the world's smartest man.
I'm thankful for being absolutely perfect.
Yeah, we're thankful for having sunny stuffing in our turkey tonight!
I'm thankful for spending Thanksgiving with all the members of the Heenan family.
Thanksgiving every day, but especially this day, as the Warriors give me the intention to deliver the pair at Survivor Series, it is going to be a war!
Hey, it's Tony Schiavone of AEW, and you are listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Cool.
Yeah, because I don't do many of these anymore, so this is pretty cool, because I don't do it as often as I used to, but... Either way, this is episode 516 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, and I am joined by a new friend. Actually, not new anymore, but I met St. Patrick in May of this year at Digital to Dice, the first convention ran by Dave Gardner, and the whole gaming playing other games is new to me still, because I've only played like Strat-O-Matic baseball for 30 years. So I met St. briefly. And then a month after I met you, I got a message from you guys on social media that you were selling your game on PDF for a sale. And I was like, all right. So I bought the wrestling game, which we'll talk about today. And I was so moved by the opening of the book that I made sure when I saw ST again in August that I had a nice long chat with him, and he joins us now. And I'm so glad to have you. Thank you for joining.
Thanks, Phil. Hey, it's a real honor to be on your show. Thank you so much for having me.
Ah, it's a pleasure, man. It's cool to have a person around my age have this passion for pro wrestling.
it is a passion.
You know, pro wrestling, the community is not like the gaming community, where we're all not the same age.
Yeah, right. No, that's very correct. I mean, I think about this, and you're younger than I am, so this might even be the case with you. When I hear that the peak period of the sport for someone is the Attitude Era, like my stomach turns a little bit. Because I was, what, so 1995, October of 95, I believe, is when Nitro starts, I think.
Either October or September.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was 23, and at the very end of college, I think I was in my graduating year, actually. And I can remember, you know, the oncoming of Guerrero and Jericho and Benoit and Mysterio and the guys who could really work. I mean, work in the ring. And I loved that. Like, I thought that was the best thing I'd ever seen in the sport. But on the other side of that, we had just come out of, you know, Doink and the Repo Man, right, and the costumey, right, occupation era, right, where every occupation had a character. And I was supposed to believe, because we're coming out of the 80s where you're supposed to believe it's real. At least that's, you're supposed to suspend that and believe it's real. I'm supposed to believe that a person loves his job as a repo man so much that he dons a Zorro mask and he comes to the ring as the Repo Man, because who wouldn't want to name themselves after their job? And all that he does in the ring is based upon his occupation. It was so nonsensical and it was so ridiculous. And it was, so we're coming out of that era. And then I'm kind of on the side in 92, I start watching ECW because I had found the internet in 94, but I had gotten a local sports channel, which had ECW around 92, 93. But when we first got the internet in my college in 94, I instantly went online and found a community of people who traded tapes.
Correct.
And so I was instantly hooked on that and probably traded in the upwards of 400 or 500 tapes over the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years all over the world, and really saw not just the history of the sport, but also sort of saw the future of the sport as well.
I'm only 2 years older than you, right?
Oh, okay.
So I'm only 2 years. I'm sorry, 2 years younger than you.
And okay.
I started tape trading a couple of years earlier in high school.
Oh, okay.
Through magazine ads.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, because we didn't have cable in my neighborhood until 89.
Yeah.
If I watched anything, it was videotaped in the suburbs in New York, in the tri-state area, from relatives or friends, or I would tape trade.
Yeah.
I was in the same kind of boat you were, except I wasn't in college, but I was just that – and ECW for me was huge also because
– Yeah, yeah.
In 93 when – When Todd Gordon, the promoter, had the falling out with Eddie Gilbert, who was the
brother, right,
they brought Paul Heyman in, and then the local sports channel here, which was Madison Square Garden Network, aired it at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, but even in 92 and 93, it wasn't what it was going to become in 95 or 96.
No, not at all, not at all.
But they still had wrestlers like, very short term, but Tito Santana,
Don Morocco, Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah, Jimmy Snuka. So you were still seeing a little of that mixed with some of the sort of Northeastern indie guys.
Right.
I was, after college, I was in Northern Illinois for a while. And so I saw all the Chicago indies. We went and saw RCW. I'll make this a short story. But we saw RCW in LaSalle, Peru, Illinois. And the star, our little indie star, was a guy who could really talk. He was a little small, but he could talk, and he was so good in the ring. Like, it just looked really unique because he was so much better than anybody else in the ring. And so I was like, man, I really like this guy. I'm going to buy his tapes. And so after, the second or third time I saw him, I went out and talked to him a while, and I bought the 4-volume Best of CM Punk. Right? And he was our indie star, our local indie star. And he, along with Ace Steele and Colt Cabana, were just indie guys who would work all the indies in my part of the state.
Right.
And Punk was, man, Phil, the nicest guy to just stand with and talk to after the show about, you know, the sport and about the history and about tapes and like how he makes his own tapes and he's got to make all these copies and all this kind of stuff. And he was the most talkative guy. And the interesting thing is, I don't know that I've ever talked to a person who talks faster than he does. Right. He's one of those guys who talks a mile a minute, and he slowed it down a lot for television. But if you've ever met someone who just looks like they're about to explode out of their body and they're talking so fast, like that's how he is. But he was all the stuff that we hear now about backstage, I don't doubt it, because popularity is a corrupting thing. But at that time in the indies, he was one of the nicer guys at the show, and it wasn't even close. But he was obviously fantastic in the ring. But anyway, so I traded tapes, which is where I really saw the world. But the game began in junior high school. So we played Dungeons and Dragons for about a year.
Yes.
And we got to the point where it was okay, but like none of us really wanted to be the dungeon master and really plan out 2 years of, nor were we talented enough as 12-year-olds to plan out this complex storyline for 2 years. We were basically just fighting a monster and then the whole thing ends. Right. And we got bored with it pretty fast, but we liked the concept, but we loved watching pro wrestling. So we designed a wrestling game after Dungeons and Dragons, which the only part that you would really recognize would be you roll for control.
Right.
You roll the move, you roll the damage. Like that is a D&D thing. Like we've stuck with that, right? That's completely taken from RPGs. But the game that we had then and the game that we have now, you would not recognize. Obviously, we got older than 12.
right.
We knew the sport more. We knew gaming more. We also learned a lot more math in life. And it just evolved and evolved and evolved to what it is now. And I think this is important to say, you know, there are a lot of pro wrestling games out there, and most of them are really good in their own way. But what we were seeing was, in our adult years, we were seeing too many of them were kind of games designed that were very short. And if you wanted to kind of laugh off the sport a little bit, like, oh, it's Tiger Man against right. Jungle Woman.
Right. I mean, not to cut you off, but there are games, what you mean by short too is it's just a roll, a move, and a finish, and that's it. There's no substance behind it, right?
Yeah, so, and we really wanted to redefine. we wanted to take the game that we made in junior high school, completely change it, modernize it, and make it a game for people that don't just want to laugh at the sport, but who honestly love the sport and for whom the sport has been an important part of their lives and remains so. Yes. And the history is important to them. And it's also, it's a good game if you want to roll a match. But I think it's a great game if you want to run a territory.
That's where you're getting guys like me who still love professional wrestling and
love it.
Yeah. Same age, we get like, I do a podcast about nostalgias. Right. But like the we'll get into the territories in a few minutes, but
because sure.
I really want to talk about the different books. Cause when I downloaded the core book, and I printed it out, I instantly just, because the core book is the NWA, the Crockett.
Yeah, right? From 1986.
86, right.
So it's 1 year, yeah.
Yeah.
And because
it's a very important...
For me, it's the peak year. Yeah, so
exactly.
I wanted to start with that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So if a fan, even a casual fan, like we actually have friends, common friends, who are just, they're casual wrestling fans. But they talk about the game. We all did at the convention. But we talk about the game like it's like when you visit different territories. It's like it just takes you back to a time, and you can relive all of it. It's not just a card that a game card or like a piece.
Right.
You're reliving the entire state. You're
absolutely
a scenario, right?
Absolutely. That was the goal. Is that we wanted to put you in the territory and say, run this. But every territory is also interchangeable. So, like, for example, I was running the Great American Bash Tour from 1986. And I had a match with Ric Flair and Arn Anderson was going to be in the main event against Charlotte. In Charlotte, and Dusty Rhodes, his partner had gotten injured in the show before. So I pulled a little swerve as the head of my own territory. And I said, well, we're going to have a surprise partner for the American Dream in Charlotte against Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. And so Ric Flair and Arn Anderson make their way to the ring. Rhodes makes his way to the ring. And then the music starts. And out comes the Dragon, Ricky Steamboat, in Charlotte, right?
Right.
And
10 years prior that him and Flair were killing
each other. Correct. And so you can do things like that with the books as well. And because the way we do the PowerPoints, the move sets, the damage, the raffle charts, everything, you can move guys back and forth if you wanted to.
Do you think, because as we get older, we sit when watching these things, like I can book that better, or I can move that guy. Like we all have our own, like same thing. Like when you watch football, we're all armchair quarterbacks, right?
Right.
Right. Exactly. So and you give that power to the player, and it's not like football where you're like, well, if I had my way, I'd coach it that way. But you can really coach. You can really book it. You can move these guys any way you want. And the engine is so good that you can do that without compromising any of the performances from the wrestlers. Either, you know, how you roll obviously is determining, but like you know, it ain't like another game where it's like, you'll have a total disadvantage because the guy has all these insane stats and you're rolling against like an Andre the Giant. You know, you can put him in any territory and it's different. There's a rule for him but there's so many ways you can interchange about it. But so how did you get to the point where from junior high to when you made the game itself, how did you get that engine going where it can be interchangeable?
Yeah. All of my pals from junior high are still my friends. And so we're in a chat group and we're all over the country. Like, we went everywhere in America. And we just really decided, I had picked it back up, I don't know, like once a year, and just tinkered with it, changed some things, did it like almost every year. I don't think I went 4 or 5 years without working on the game in some manner. I mean, I would go a week, like once a year, and like really work on it a lot. And then it would go back in the back burner. But about, I don't know, 10 years or so ago, I was talking to all the guys again in our text group, and they basically said, hey, yeah, the game. And we're talking about the game. And I said, you know, guys, I want to sort of have like a final product here so that we can say, this is the game. And then we can work on territories rather than the game. So they were all fine with me sort of taking it as my own, because I had been the one all along who really worked on it the most and had really taken care and ownership of it as well. But I had decided earlier, I said, and this was in the 80s, so many guys move back and forth.
Yeah.
Like, you want to be able to have everything be so flexible. And how many times in the 80s are we saying to ourselves, well, I wish the American dream would come back to Madison Square Garden in 1986 and take on Randy Savage or something? Like you always would say that in your head, knowing it's not going to happen until they actually make the move, because of all the rivalries, you know, the territory rules in the early 80s, all that. And if you're not going to move, you're not going to move. So, especially in the 90s. In the 80s, they moved around a lot. So you would see almost everyone in every territory, which is also a problem with starting in the 80s, which we did. Was, I think in the first 5 books we did, I think Kamala was in 4 of the 5. Like,
right, because he was in Crockett.
Because he was everywhere. Yeah. So he's everywhere. So we started to get a little bit of overlap there going. And I was like, well, this is, I don't mind, because to me, it's Kamala, but he was portrayed as being stronger in one territory rather than another territory.
Right. Right.
So the character's not exactly the same, and the status of him is not exactly the same. For example, Abdullah in Texas is ranked much higher than he would be in Charlotte.
Oh yeah.
Because so to me, that's important. So I want to use the Abdullah who's in Texas. Like, that's my guy, right? But I wanted to be able to do just wild things. And so I find that a lot of wrestling games that are out now sort of operate in a little box where everything sort of fits in the rules and this and this and this. When we redesign the entire game, it's very flexible. Like, you can do almost anything you want to do because you run the territory.
Right.
I mean, it's very flexible. And
that's important. It's important if you're going to do something like this, if you're going to bring back all these territories, it's important that you can do that. Because, I mean, how many times have you watched Crockett where you only seen guys for 6 weeks or 3 months?
Well, yeah.
You, oh, man, can you imagine if Manny Fernandez would have stayed?
That's one of the problems with doing the game. So when I chart the matches, what I do is every piece of tape that we have in the territory, I chart move by move, every single one. So, which is why a territory takes, for me to do, it takes about 8 to 10 months. Because I've charted every match that we possibly could find on tape, and I have a lot of tapes, or online. But so every wrestler to qualify has to have 100 moves, 100 total moves, not 100 unique moves. So it could be 100 punches, right? So, but you have to qualify. So a person who was there for 3 weeks may not get to 100 moves. So not everyone qualifies, but usually we're at a point where every territory for a while has had at least 125 guys in it and 20 or 30 plus tag teams who qualified and, you know, match types and all this kind of thing. So we're at a pretty good point, but we're moving into the 90s now. So the next territory that will be out will be the one after the core rule book. It'll be Atlanta from 87 to the week before Nitro in 95. So it's going to run that period.
Yeah. And, you know, for even – so now another question I was wondering, like, how are we selling this to an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, even 20-year-old who all they know is John Cena and
– Yeah.
And, like, how do – because, again, like, the community is a bunch of old dudes, like, which is fine. Yeah. We love all our guys, right? But, like, my son
– Yeah.
My son will obviously play it because of me, but, like, how do I convince a couple of his friends in college now to come play? Like, you know, it's like...
Honestly, so far, I would say not very well. we decided to start with the core rule book, which is Crockett Promotions 1986. And then we're going to move outward in both directions in chronological order. Now, so we've done New York from 85 to 90. We've done Dallas from 81 to 87. We've done Memphis from 81 to 87. We did the AWA up through 87. And we've done Watts also, which just happened to be 81 through 87 as well. So that's Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma. Just released it. So we've really hit the 80s hard. And for anyone who's asking, well, are you going to do Florida? Are you going to do Georgia? Are you going to do Portland? Are you going to do Calgary? The answer is yes to everything.
Thank you.
To everything. But I feel like we exhausted the 80s so much that we're going to take a few little jumps. And then at some point I'll begin charting a territory like Portland. There's a lot of Portland stuff out there. So,
Goodness, Don Owens, you're talking about, right?
I'll begin charting Portland sort of privately. And then one day it'll just come out as a surprise. I mean, but we moved back to Atlanta so we could get into the 90s. Because I think there was an eagerness on the part of everyone who plays the games to get into ECW, to get into the Attitude Era, to get into the 90s. So we're doing Atlanta now, and it's going to end the week before Nitro starts. And then we're going to do New York from 90 to about 95, which will be the whole area we opened with today with Repo Man and Doink and Dink and Donk and whoever. But really, I make jokes about that era, but that era, we will also get a really good Shawn Michaels. We'll get a really good Bret Hart. That'll be a cool era to do.
Yeah.
Actually.
And I kind of got
a lot of reasons.
I kind of got a glimpse of your attention to detail, even in the other games that you've put out through mutual friends of ours that play your games. Like, and because it's really appreciated, the attention to detail. Because, we talked about you and I in August, we briefly talked about, like, you know, you give me like your favorite match and why was it your favorite match. And when I walked away from that conversation, I had said to our friends, I'm like, I said, this is why I still love it to this day. is because we see it as an art form than more than the entertainment kind of event. Don't get me wrong,
yeah, absolutely.
Like yeah, someone absolutely. Actually recently, like at what you know, because I was in Japan earlier this year, and my dream vacation, and I saw 9 shows in 2 weeks from 3 or 4 different promotions, and someone had said to me like, why would you go 14,000 miles to watch wrestling? Yeah. Like, because it's just, I said I look at it like
yeah.
I have a friend. I have friends who were like in the local theater community here on Staten Island, New York. I'm like, I look at wrestling how you guys look at Broadway shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And
understood.
Your attention to detail is amazing. Even like I said, even to your other games, like your football game is insanely popular right now, and people who've played these games for a long time, like our mutual friends, and I'll use Vinny as an example. Vinny Mancini. Vinny said ST's attention to detail. If the flow of the game is so good, you feel like you're there. And it's the same thing with the squared circle. Like if you run a card and you roll in these matches, it's 1986.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the way it should be. And not every game could come off like that. So your attention to detail is very much appreciated, and it shows in everything you and your crew do.
I should say, before I was a writer, editor, publisher, I was a high school history teacher.
Okay.
So I appreciate being in the era and feeling like you are in the era. And, you know, it was so important for us to make sure. And the flexible thing about it is that you could say one day, you could take a Roman Reigns match and put it in 1986 and use that raffle chart. And it will feel like, you know, he's in 1986 if you wanted to do that. Like you could move everything around from the tag teams, the managers. You could do everything and move it around and it'll still fit.
Right.
Now, when we get to the modern era, there are going to be some changes that we're going to have to make. There's a lot more action outside of the ring, for example. A lot more action outside of the ring. ECW itself is going to seem like a whole new game almost, because there are so many things that have to happen in the mechanics to make it real to you, to make it seem like you are in the bingo hall. Right. There are so many things that have to occur in the mechanics that there's going to be a lot of options. There's going to be a lot more out of ring action. Obviously, we have to figure out finally in the game how to bring in tables, ladders, and chairs. We have to. So one of the things for everyone out there is, if you're thinking about match types, like, hey, does your game have Hell in the Cell? It does not have Hell in the Cell yet, because one of the things that we do is we introduce new match types in the era and in the territory where they occur first in the tapes. So Hell in a Cell will be introduced in the 90s, but War Games is going to be introduced in the next set.
Yeah.
In the next set. Yep. So you'll see that. You know, the Chamber of Horrors match will be introduced in the next set. Things like that will occur in era. So you'll get that feel as well.
The most important part of pro wrestling is storytelling, right?
Correct.
Like if you can have two great guys in the ring, or two teams of guys in the ring, and girls, obviously, I don't want to discredit the females, but you put those wrestlers in the ring, and if they don't tell you a good story, it's just like dancing to no music. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, like, that part of it is important. We should let people know, too, because it's...
it has to be a good story.
It's got to be a good story.
See, my friend says, it told a story, though. The match really told a story. And I was like, yeah, but the story is that he has an arm injury, okay? And the part that I don't like about the story is, Okay, now because he has a hobbling arm the entire match, that match was boring. Like, it, you can tell a story and it makes the match significantly worse as you're watching it on television, right? And I feel like a lot of injury storylines make matches a lot worse, not better. So yeah, the quality of story, and I'll be honest with you, I screwed that up in the beginning. I woefully underestimated how many people did not have a story in their head that they wanted to tell. I really believed that diehard pro wrestling people who wanted a game already had a sort of territory in their head and wanted more room to roam and wanted more options and wanted more. What I underestimated was I have a lot of guys who say, I need help on angles. I don't have any ideas.
Right. Because you could do a bunch of dream matches, which is great.
Or tournaments, which I am so against.
I love tournaments. Yeah, but
I love them. I'm so against overdoing them, though.
Yeah.
Because it's no longer special if you overdo it.
Right. It's got to mean something.
I tell everybody, when you get the book, when you get the first book, don't instantly start rolling Rhodes against Flair as your first match. I said, let it be special. Wait until you're 100% sure how to play the game and then build it up. And then I said, don't do that right out of the box. Like, don't ruin what is going to be your best match in the first book. And so what we're working on now for a future book at some point are sort of random angle generators for guys who just say, I want an angle here, but I have no ideas. So you'll be able to sort of roll one on a chart at some point. It will probably debut here in a couple books.
Awesome.
But I really thought everybody would just want to play around with it and like make up their own angles and do it. But no, guys want to roll on an angle chart. I underestimated that woefully.
Yeah, you know, I'm a slow learner. So for me, the easier for me, the better. And if it's not as easy for me, I have to keep doing it. Obviously, you know, repetition is the best thing. But
absolutely.
But for me, as a hardcore fan, I know the casual fan would do that. The Hogan and Flair and Dusty. Dusty's my guy. So I mean, I would book Dusty and everything, but.
The American Dream, baby.
Yes, about the bullet of wood, if you will. But I'm like, for me, you know, it's got to be meaningful, and if the more you do it, the better it looks. You know, like if it'd be like reading a book, like a storybook, or like like back in the day we had the Choose Your Own Adventure books. Remember those? And and it's like, you know, if you want Mr. Smith to go into the green room, turn to page 12. Well, if I wanted the missing link to turn on Gary Hart, then go to page 11 and see what happens in this card. And, you know, like these are things that, you know, the fan could really, really sink their teeth into and not compromise any of the storytelling, you know? It's important, man. Like, you know, like you gotta, I don't want to poo-poo on today's game. Cause I love today's wrestling too. But
yeah.
Like AEW, I even flew to Chicago for AEW before it was a thing. You know, but AEW is you got a guy who all he does for the last 5 years is just put on dream matches, and now he's finally getting it where you have to tell stories.
And it took AEW is tough.
Right. But it's a tough watch for an older fan. But you know, I understand the concept, but like he's just now getting around to telling stories and hiring people that are gonna do that for him, you know?
Here's my thing with AEW though. If this were 1995 and you gave me an AEW tape of the top 10 matches, it would be out of this world. Like the top 10 matches in isolation are incredible. Like, they do some incredible stuff in the ring, and the matches are fantastic. But when you watch it on a week-to-week basis as a fan in real time, yeah, there are a lot of times where you're just scratching your head like, I just don't get why this is happening. I just don't understand it.
You know how hard it was for me in 1989 to accept Dusty Rhodes and Polka Dots as a 15-year-old? Like,
yeah.
I didn't get it. I was like, I just watched him win the NWA title 3 years prior. Like, I just, I for me, as a 15-year-old, I couldn't wrap my head around it until I was about 20.
Like, you know, Can I tell you who ruined it all for me? This is not going to be the answer that you expect. Because the person who ruined it all for me believes and believed until the day he died that everybody else was ruining the sport and exposing the business, as they say.
Holly Race?
Bill Watts exposed the business to me because we had satellite, or I used to get satellite tapes in school from the one kid that had the big satellite in the back in the backyard. And he was a fan, so he recorded for me, right?
Right.
And I saw the episode where Bill Watts explained how New York chair shots are done. How they work the chairs.
Right.
And his intention was, see, in New York, they fake it, but our guys are hardcore. Our guys are really slamming them with chairs, right? What I saw was, oh, okay, so all chair shots are bullshit now, right? Bill Watts exposed the business to me out of his petty jealousy for McMahon. In trying to expose McMahon and his territory, for me, he exposed the whole business. He was a petty man, though. He was a petty man. As I charted the Watts territory, the amount of anytime anyone left the territory, he would savage them for weeks on the show. And it didn't feel like it was a work. Like, he was really angry when anyone left, especially if they left for New York. Like, he was petty and he was small and he was angry. So I'm not a big Bill Watts fan. I'm a fan of his work.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a huge fan of his territory. That book is fun. There's a lot of cool stuff in there.
There's a book written by my friend Greg Klein about the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
In that era, and how Watts built him up as the Hulk Hogan of the territory.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there were so many guys like Bill Watts that were former wrestlers, became promoters, that wanted to keep everything in line and keep kayfabe.
It
gets away from you the more you do, the more you expose, the more you talk, the more you promote it.
Absolutely.
It's not, and I see your point, you know, so I don't know if it's a thing where it's more appreciated now, feel like, right?
Because, right, but he unintentionally exposed the business to me.
Yeah, 100%.
Because he was petty.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, and you know, you always hear it asked, is there any scenario in which what happened in the 80s would not have happened and it ends up all under one company? And it wasn't as much McMahon's doing per se as it was that these guys sold out. Like, we blame McMahon all the time, and I'm not a fan of McMahon at all, but we blame him all the time because Vern Gagne, because Bill Watts, because they all took the money. Like, that's not McMahon's fault necessarily that they took the money.
They weren't getting paid, these guys, so McMahon just cherry-picked everybody.
Yeah, well, and he bought them off. Like, he bought off Stu Hart. He bought off everyone. But you can't buy people off who aren't open to being bought off. I mean, we can blame him all day, but they took the money. I mean, that's the bottom line.
I mean, every good promoter shot themselves in the foot, whether it was Vern Gagne, Crockett.
Yeah.
You know, those guys just like they let it get away from them, you know?
I mean, I mean to think that in the early 80s, Jerry Jarrett was worried about Angelo Poffo and his small little outlaw territory.
Right. IWA.
When on his heels was the McMahons coming right through the back door. I mean, seems crazy now, but that's the way it was. I mean, it was, but I'm glad we have that history. They can't take the history away. And so I'm glad we have that on tape. I'm glad we have it all. I still watch it all the time.
Absolutely.
It's the thing I watch the most. I mean, to be able to not just watch it, you know, to be able to put yourself in it, for me, is a real special thing that means a lot to me. So, again, I'm not here to bash other games as much as to say, like, there are games out there, if you want to say, oh, we have this guy against this guy, and in 5 minutes it's done, and ha, 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 that was great fun. He pulled out a nightstick, and oh, it was great. But this game is really meant for a person like you or I who can honestly say, and people will think we're nuts, like, the sport means a lot to our lives our histories.
And it means a ton to you. Just like I said, just reading the introduction to the core book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I was 10 years old all over again. You know what I'm saying? Like, it, I was like, this guy gets it. Not to say the other teams don't get it, but you are giving me what I didn't have action figures back then until the LJN figures. We didn't have all the trading cards till that stuff came out. We didn't have all we had were magazines up until the tape trading era, obviously. But all we had were magazines, three to be exact, here in the
tri-state. Yeah,
But like, you have that, you've captured the essence of it. And it's really important even for a casual fan. I'll tell them this: it's really important if you're gonna dive into something like this. And obviously I want everybody to do that. But if you're going to dive into it, you need to know there's a lot of lineage behind it. Yeah. Every territory tells story. Every territory has an insane amount of talent that were either overlooked or underlooked, or
absolutely
had their 1 year of there are so many guys. I mean, we could do a whole other podcast on that on wrestlers that should have been something, the Al Perez's of the world, and you know, like, right? But like, TA, if he didn't smack
Magnum,
right? So, but love Magnum. All these things, and like, Billy Jack Haynes, and all these other cats,
been crazy, yeah,
right, exactly. But like, you could just tell a story, like, you could take these guys and put them where they belong,
yes,
title match. You could book them in other territories. Right.
And so,
The
problem with turning wrestling into a sports game is that you open yourself up to things like upsets, to things like weird results, to things like. So, in the Watts book, which is our most recent release, what we try to do in each territory as well is introduce a new mechanic, which I think enhances the experience for everyone. And it's a reason to have all the books. Even if you're not as much interested in the territory, you have new match types, you've got new mechanics, you've got a lot of stuff in there that enhances the whole experience with all the books.
Right.
So we introduced a sort of triggering process in the Watts book, which is kind of like, in mathematics, it's kind of like if and then, right? And then we explained how to write them, and we gave some examples. So the example that I used was, if you're going into Starrcade and 2 weeks before Starrcade on your schedule, the Nature Boy Ric Flair has a match with Brad Armstrong, and he's got a Starrcade match with Magnum TA for the championship, and you sure don't want to see Brad Armstrong against Magnum TA at Starrcade as the main event, you can put in a mechanism that says, if Armstrong is ahead by 100 points at any time in this match, the Horsemen run in and beat down Armstrong, and it's called as a disqualification. Okay, A, that's realistic. That would have actually happened. But B, it also allows you to work in little storyline points to sort of keep your main storylines going along the road you want them to go.
Right.
And there are so many of them in the book, in the Watts book, that work as examples. It's really worth doing, and we do them. If you pile drive Hawk, you roll a die, and if you roll 1 to 5, he just pops up. He no-sells it, right?
Like you normally did.
Yes. Yeah. So we wrote those in so that you can have those, and then we showed you how to write them in the Watts book. And so you can write those for anyone, for any reason, for all the books. To pinpoint things even more
right
than they already are, for you to make sure that certain things happen. Because you sure don't want Brad Armstrong to pull an upset a week before Starrcade and go into Starrcade with the belt. And it's not really important on a card. It's just the way you handle a card in the Omni is not the same way you would handle a card in Owensboro, Kentucky, right? So when you book the territory, you kind of say, okay, I'm more apt to get wacky endings and I'm cool with it in Owensboro, but in Starrcade, I play it straight. Like, I don't affect anything. Like, I don't put my will onto any match in Starrcade or in any other pay-per-view. I allow just the dice to run the entire show.
That's a good segue, because I've been dying to ask you this question.
Yeah.
You did a podcast a bunch of months ago with Dave Gardner on his podcast, right? And Dave, you guys talked about the sports games and folks who have their home brews.
Yeah.
Which kind of take away from the, not the realism, so to speak, but the results, right?
They always do. Yes.
Correct. So now my question to you is, with the game, with the squared circle game, do you think, because it's a big community you have now between the Delphi boards and Facebook, do you see more of folks like tweaking what you already have to get to kind of get the result they want in the matches? Or do you
here's my abject hypocrisy, right? In sports games with hard rules, in baseball, I don't think that you should change the game so that it's a 12 inning game and there are two outs an inning.
Okay.
Right? I don't like that. And I don't like, it's so hard to do a sports game. It's so hard to create a sports game with hard stats and hard rules. Hard meaning absolute, not meaning it's hard to play.
Right. I get it. I understand.
Yeah. It's so tough to do that behind the scenes that the gamer himself has a homebrew idea. Oh, I want to add this to the game. You don't know what you're throwing off behind the scenes. Like, you don't know. You think you're not throwing off anything whatsoever, that you're just adding this great thing to it. But I guarantee you're throwing off something in the game. In a wrestling game, however, we have created it to where you can homebrew the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Because in our minds, it's you running your own territory. So it's you being able to book your own territory. It's not homebrewing necessarily. For us, it's opening up your talents in storytelling. So you have to have it as an open game in that respect, where you can't have basketball being like, you can't change the stats of the point guard before the game so that he has a fantastic game.
Right.
Because that's not real. You're just arbitrarily changing the numbers.
Right. To make him better. Yeah.
Yeah. In wrestling, if you want someone to go on a streak, you can just make the streak happen. That's why I say I'm more apt to do that on an Owensboro, Kentucky show. But when it comes to pay-per-views, I allow the dice to decide everything. I play it straight.
Yeah, it has to mean something. Let me rephrase that. It's got to be significant, because everything means something to you when you're playing, you know?
But I'm all for, in Owensboro, like, kind of tweaking some things and making some things happen. And if Tim Horner is ahead of Nikita Koloff by 100 points, I may have Ivan run into the match and we just call it. Because at that point in my territory, I don't need Horner to beat Koloff, right? That would screw up that other storyline, and it would screw up my plans for Koloff. And I don't know how I would handle Horner, and like, it would do so many things that I'm okay with you kind of really working the storylines in that respect. Now, we have guys out there who don't do that at all. We have guys out there who play every card straight up and down. So if they're upsets, they're upsets. And you can do that as well, because the game works just fine like that.
Right.
But that's where I see it as a storyline as well, where I will write out my schedule for a month. I do 3 cards a week in a month calendar time, and each card has 5 matches, which seems like a short card, but the way the game works, 5 matches is just fine for the card. And so I'll work a month, and not every card has the same importance. Like, Madison Square Garden is more important. You know, the Charlotte Coliseum is more important.
The Omni's more important.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
So you're working towards those, but on these little small house shows, I kind of toy around with it a little bit. And there are still a lot of matches that I just run straight up, but I toy around with it a little bit. And if someone out there is going, yeah, you have to play through 5 full matches, well, we have a process by which you can decide a match in 2 roles. If you basically have a job guy and a job guy opening the card in Owensboro, and you just want to find out who won, you can do that as well.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Or you can play out the entire thing. So again, there are so many options. There are so many ways that you can run this game. It's almost, in certain ways, it's almost an RPG in that respect.
Yeah, that's the first thing I said to our mutual friends that when I first got the download, I was like, this is like an RPG, and
yeah,
it puts you in that kind of state of mind, you know?
Mm. Yeah, because there's so many options that you have core rules, but you can write your own adventure. I mean, it's really good in that respect. And I hope everyone out there who's at all interested tries it out. I mean, there will be a sale on Black Friday weekend of some sort. The on-demand publisher who we go through will not tell us what the sale is until a day before. But the Squared Circle itself has a Facebook page.
Yes. The game is the Squared Circle Pro Wrestling Simulation Game.
Yep.
It's got, like ST said, it's got the core book, which is the Crockett promotion from 86. And then it's got the other territories that he put out already.
Yep.
The latest one is you put out
was is Watts.
The MSG.
Jesus, I'm behind. Put out the New York territory.
Yeah.
Through 1983.
Right, which is the first year I got into wrestling.
Yeah. So it is your territory with San Martino and Backlund and Peak Andre the Giant. And Andre in that book is almost unbeatable, as he should be.
Absolutely.
He should be. But the challenge with Andre is that you have to use him well, right?
The book. Of course.
Like, you can't put a title on him, because how do you take the title off of Andre? Like, how do you book that? I mean, how do you... So you have to book him well. They booked him in a lot of tag matches. So in a lot of like 2-on-3 tag matches or something, where he would come in and explode for 2 minutes and then be back out. And he's almost unbeatable in the game. And I say almost because, you know, dice are dice and anything can happen. But
of course,
Peak Andre is a force.
Yeah.
An absolute force.
Absolutely.
And Backlund is great. San Martino is obviously out of this world. Fantastic. But it's fun to play the Wild Samoans and just all the guys in that era. Morocco, Peak Morocco.
Morocco's my favorite IC champ.
Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy Superfly.
Yeah.
At his peak. There is a mechanic in the book where you can come off the top of the cage. And it's rare because it didn't happen often, right? So it's rare. I can think of twice right offhand, but he came off the top in the Backlund match as well, which a lot of people I think don't recall.
They don't remember.
They only recall the Morocco match. But so it's pretty rare that you can do it, but you can do it. So I'm pretty happy with things like that. It's just a lot of fun. I mean, if someone wants to get a deep wrestling game that is going to explore the history that they love, I hope they try it out. I do.
I want all my throwbackers to try it out. And I want people to know that they're just as passionate fans as we are. You know, I mean,
the gaming
community is so giving and it's so awesome. And your game creating is off the charts from what I've seen since, like I said, I've only been playing other games since like May of this year. But like I said, the attention to detail is amazing. It's awesome. And for me as a hardcore fan, as an old school wrestling fan, this is the coup de grace. This is what you need to do if you're going to sit down and play and immerse yourself in something like in professional wrestling from back when. Before I let you, I know you're a busy man.
Sure.
What's the most fun you've had since the games have been out? What's the most fun you've had? What particular wrestler era?
I would say the. So, I use the core rulebook by far the most because that's my peak as well. That year in Crockett to me is perfect.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
And the Great American Bash Tour is the highlight of my sporting life, yeah, right?
It was a month long.
So we do 13 bash cards where the title is up against 13 opponents.
Yeah.
But the way I try to control the bash, the way I book the storylines, is always really interesting to me, and it challenges me to try to, because it's an entire tour, it challenges me to do some cool things. So I love every time I restart 1986 and I get to announce the Bash tour in May and it starts in July. I'm always sort of interested, you know, the baby doll thing that I did with Cornette was pretty cool. I did a thing, the first show of the Bash one year, where baby doll and Cornette have a match, and whoever wins the match is able to manage the Midnight Express through the rest of the Bash tour. The person who loses the match is off the tour until the tour ends.
And this is Dennis and Bobby, not Dennis and Stan yet.
Correct.
Yes.
Baby doll wins the match. So she manages the Midnight Express for the remainder of the Bash tour. They're a little tepid at first, as is she. There's always some strife.
Of course.
Halfway through the Bash, they really start to bond and work some tag matches, right? Nice. Now, Cornette is still doing like commentary here and there. So I still have him in the storyline. At the end of the Bash, we have a show at the Omni the night after the Bash ends. And Cornette is managing the Rock and Roll Express one night only against the Baby Doll and the Midnight Express.
Yeah, of course.
Well, at the end of the match, they've knocked the Rock and Roll Express out of the match. Cornette comes in with the racket. He's going to hit Bobby right in the back, and he turns and he hits her instead. And so Baby Doll is out. Bobby, Condrey, and Cornette are in the ring, arms up, tag team champions. Wow. And the team is back together.
So we do a segment on Turnbuckle Throwbacks called Fantasy Warfare. And what we do is we take certain angles and certain cards, and we totally rebook them.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
So now you're invested now, because now you have to come back on the show and do a couple of those with me, because
and because the Bash was such a big event, that was only one of the minor angles in the entire Bash.
Yeah, but you already sold me on that. That's amazing in itself, you know.
Yeah, like that was not the headline. That was not the world title defenses. No. That was not the cage matches. Like, that was just one part of it. So I love to, like, try to outdo what I did last year in the Bash. So that whole tour is always a lot of fun. And it allows you time, because it's 13 nights over a month. It allows you time to really work things.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
That was a lot of fun.
That's great. All right. So listen, before I let you go,
cool.
Tell the folks where they can get the game. I know we'll post a link in the synopsis and on.
Yeah,
on.
It's a long address that even if I read the address here, it's not going to be good.
Yeah, we'll post
so
it.
What we can do is put everything in the show notes.
Yep.
And if they want to go there, we sell the magazine about sports gaming as well. We also do a magazine. It's on the same page. So I'm sorry, when everybody goes to that page, you'll have to scroll.
No, but because that's all in one place. There's also a Squared Circle Facebook page as well.
Yes. But the books being sold are all in the same place as the magazine. Okay. So you'll have to do a little bit of scrolling there.
Yeah. I do have your hockey issue that you guys put out a few months ago.
Oh, yeah. That was a good issue.
That was a good issue, yeah.
But you guys, and if anybody out there is a sports guy, especially who loves these games, like the sports gaming community is so good.
It is.
I've had a bad throat the whole day. I apologize to everybody. I've been hacking and coughing.
Just thank you for coming on, man. No, but the community is amazing. And
it is amazing.
So many cool people. I mean, obviously you included, but there's so many people that are so dedicated and so into the games that they're always wanting to help. They're always wanting to get into what
these
and see, make sure you're having enjoying the game to the best of its the best of its ability. That's what it should be.
I would be remiss if I did not answer the thing I get asked the most, so that no one has to email me and ask, are you going to do ... The answer is yes.
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 I mean, are we going about Japan already? So I mean,
to do Japan. Yes. We're going to do new Japan. We'll do all Japan. We'll do old all Japan. We'll do new all Japan. We'll do old new Japan. We'll be doing Stardom. We'll be doing Yoshi. We'll be doing AJW. We'll be doing Wing. We'll be doing FMW.
I mean, that's
we'll be doing yeah. So the goal is, all we need is to be able to chart it, right? So pretty much everything after 1980 can all be done.
Yes.
I had someone ask me a harder question once, and he said, are you going to kind of do an indie book? And I'm like, well, that's a good idea.
I mean, I would do an indie book. You can highlight certain indie feds.
Yeah, kind of, because there was a time in the trading world in the early 2000s, like 2000 to about 2005, where the indie stuff was hot.
Of course.
Like really hot.
Yeah, of course.
And so you have guys then like, you know, Loki and
Amazing Red.
Amazing Red.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Those guys absolutely deserve that respect. So if we do an indie book, it'll probably be something that's like 95 through 05 or some kind of deal like that. But it's hard to sort of coalesce what was being done on the indies in New Jersey at that time against like Chikara, for example.
Jersey All Pro. Because
they're totally different, right?
Yeah, combat wrestling, ECPW.
Yeah, so we may have to work on Chikara as one little book by itself. But I mean, the answer is yes. Are we going to do AAA? Yes. Are we going to do Calgary? Yes. Anything that we can find enough. And again, I have transferred most of my tapes to external hard drives, and we have everything that's online. So as long as I can find, what it makes hard is I have some guys asking me, are you going to do LA and are you going to do the Bay Area? Well,
there's not a lot of footage though.
There's not a lot. No, we might try to grab a few guys out of there just to have them. And we might do one classic book at some point with guys from the black and white era. I mean
Patterson and Stevens alone in Cali, you know, like that.
Yeah, we have to do that.
Yeah, of course.
But I don't know if we can do it in the form of a whole territory, because I don't know if there's enough stuff to chart.
100%. I agree. Absolutely.
But we will try to do a classic book of some kind and get those kinds of guys in.
Well,
that's and the girls. Yes, we're probably going to.
Yeah.
We're probably, as far as America is concerned, we're probably going to do like three books. One that goes through probably 95. We'll do the sort of attitude and post-attitude era. And then we'll probably start another one at the start of AEW and do from that era, which is what, 2019 was it?
Yeah,
2019 on as well. So we'll probably throw them all into three books. And the Japanese girls themselves will probably be organized by territory in their own books.
I'd be remiss if I didn't shout out. I was over the past this past weekend. I was in Long Island, New York, and there was a big convention there. And I got to wanted to meet the Great Muta. He wasn't in Japan when I went to when I went to visit. He had retired. I wanted to get his autograph and take a picture. And I'm actually friends with the Jumping Bomb Angels in their camp.
Yeah.
So
fantastic.
They're about to celebrate their 40th anniversary in Japan. And my guys are going over there in 2 weeks. And my one buddy's doing a documentary on them, my boy Tom D'Amico.
Yeah.
And they're going to be filming the whole thing. And after speaking with them at dinner last week, we were talking. Itsuki's English is good. Norio really doesn't speak English, but
he's
been here for a minute. But like, we talked about that era of women's. Of Joshi, because women's wrestling wasn't big here back in the day, so
yeah,
you know, it was more of an attraction than it was a regular thing. But they there's so much lineage there too, so there's so much there's so much that you have this huge giant huge canvas of stuff that you can do, man. So
it's well, I mean, exciting. I think at its peak from 86 or so to 95, 96. I think AJW was so incredible.
And insanely incredible, yes.
Incredible. 100%. But to give the modern girls a shout out, man, I think Stardom today is fantastic.
I saw two shows, one in Philly,
I love
one
Stardom.
In Japan, and they were fantastic.
Yeah, I love the work being done there as well.
Fantastic. Well produced.
Yeah, I don't understand a lot of it. I don't speak Japanese.
No, you don't have to, though. Like,
But I know a good match, right?
Obviously.
And the matches are good. I don't quite understand, you know, the splitting up into teams and the worlds and the factions. And
the booking is way different there, too. But again,
way different.
You have enough though to work with, and it's gonna be fun, man.
Yeah, and by the time we do the Stardom book, I will have learned it. Like I wouldn't do it if I don't know it. So I'll have learned it, and it will be done right. It will be done correctly. But again, we're starting at 86. We're in the 90s now. We're following everything out chronologically. So I just ask that everyone be patient with us, and it takes us 8 to 10 months, but the product that you'll have, because it takes so long, is really good. I didn't want to make a game and just sort of hack it all, just patch it up together. I didn't want to do that to anyone out there. I wanted the wrestling historian fan, that person, to really love a game that had the respect that they thought the sport deserved.
100%. No, it's the way to do it, man. If you're gonna you can't half ass it. You're gonna do it right. And it deserves it. It deserves it.
Yeah.
You know.
Cool. Yeah, so everything will be in the show notes, the links, the addresses. On the Facebook page, if we don't respond to you instantly, DM us and say, hey, we heard you on the show. Because if we don't have mutual friends or we're not in mutual groups together, we don't know who's a spammer and who's not. So sometimes we are hesitant about who we allow in.
Yeah, of course.
But if you DM us and say, hey, I just applied to the group. If you prove me, that would be cool. I heard you on the show. That's fine. Yeah.
And I'll post links up to the Facebook pages as well.
Yeah.
On the throwbacks page.
We'll do that.
It's active, but not as crazy as the pages are.
Well, I've heard your show before. Obviously you have a fantastic show and, I hope everyone gives the game a try. I don't know if I've explained it well today, but
no, you did. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope everyone really sort of tries it out. Black Friday would be an excellent time for that. Obviously, last year, the publisher, the on-demand publisher that we go through had like a 20% off sale. That would be a good time. But I assume they'll do it again this year.
Absolutely. Well, either way, I mean, we're gonna get you some sales, hopefully, and we're gonna get some more people interested in the game. Because, like I said, if I'm playing it and they know I'm a nostalgic fanatic, you know, they're gonna gravitate to someone else who my fans particularly, but the fans of the podcast. Because it's important, man, that we expand the community, and not everything has to be on a Xbox or a PlayStation.
Oh no, I think it feels. I think the game it just feels right, and I think when you lay it out on paper and have dice in your hand, and you're watching everything occur, I think you can't replicate that on a screen.
No, you can't. You can't. You have to have some sort of imagination to
absolutely,
you know, and this canvas that you've painted so far for us is absolutely amazing. And I
thank you so much, Phil.
Thank you so much for having the time to take. And again, I'm getting you back on the show. We're gonna rebook some stuff, and
let's talk
some wrestling. And obviously, when you put new stuff out, we'll get you back on the show. And we'll keep this relationship going, and I'll hope to see you soon as well. So have a great holiday. If I don't speak to you. We'll hook up soon.
All right, let's do it.
All right, my friend, take care.
All right, thanks.
All right.